Hi everyone, welcome to the Django seminar. Django is a web application framework written in Python. It's designed to make writing web applications very, very easy. Why Django, you may ask? A lot of reasons. It's fast. Pre-built components mean that you can skip lots of code writing. It's designed in a package with lots of stuff that comes with it so that there's a lot fewer things that you have to write code for. It's easy. SQL is abstracted away. It's built on top of SQL databases like MySQL or SQLite, but you don't have to worry about writing the actual SQL code because all of it's pre-written for you. You can just use Django's database layer to do that. It's also extensible. Development is separated into multiple layers. It uses a model very similar to the model view controller method of writing web applications, and that means you separate the different components of your web application so that if you change one component, you don't have to make changes to other things. And the best reason why you'd want to pick Django is because there's no dollar signs in your code. And we all know that dollar signs suck. Okay, so some things that you have to know before you get started in Django. Mostly it's just Python. Django is written entirely in Python, so you will have to learn the Python programming language. However, the Python programming language is very easy to learn. So we'll just go through a little introduction real quick. First thing is that it's an interpreted language. That means it's kind of like PHP. You don't have to compile anything. You just write the code and you go. So, for example, I will open up a Python interpreter right here. We can just start typing code. For example, 2 plus 2. You get your result right away. And so this is the Python interactive interpreter. If you've installed Python, you can just you can open the interactive interpreter and just start typing code in there, and you know things will just start to work. Alternatively, you can run Python on your scripts, and you know it'll work very similar to a C script. Okay, so next thing is white space. So Python actually is cognizant of white space. So in C and PHP, didn't really matter where you put your white space. Like you could tab or indent however you want. But in Python, that's not the case. Instead of having curly braces or other types of delimiting marks, it uses white space to sort of delimit where things go. And that may be a little bit confusing now, but it'll become really apparent what that means. Small warning, don't mix tabs and spaces in your code. So the recommendation is just to always use spaces. Most text editors, you can configure them to only use spaces and when you push the tab button. But also, if you're the only one editing the code, you know, and you only use one text editor, whatever it is, it'll be fine. All right. So. Variables in Python. There are variables just like in C, but its variables are a lot closer to variables in JavaScript because you don't have to declare what types they are. They don't ever have to be malloced or freed. You don't have to declare variables, you can just begin using them. So the first time you use a variable, it's like you're declaring it. And then they have some scope issues where variables only have local, global, or built-in scope. So their scope isn't delimited by braces. So like if you declare a variable inside a for loop, that variable can be used outside the for loop because of the different scoping rules in Python. Okay, so let's talk about some built-in data types that will be important. So in Python, they have lists. Lists are like arrays in C. But here, they're actually useful, and you don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops to use them. So this is some code that you would type into the Python interpreter. And as you can see from the first line, you'll notice that you can put anything you want in lists. Unlike arrays, don't have to have the same type in every slot. You can put whatever you want. And if you look at the last item, you'll notice it's actually another list inside the list. So the first variable is a Boolean, the next two are integers, the next one's a string, and the last one's a list. You can do whatever you want with the list. And then lists also have lots of methods on them. So like if you wanted to reverse a list, that's built into the list. Any operation that you would normally expect a list to be able to do to itself, you can do. You can reverse a list. You can pick a certain item out of the list. You can sort a list. All of that is really easy with the built-in methods. You can also get the length of the list. If you look at the bottom in this code over here, this is called slicing. So the first one is L bracket 2 bracket, which means the second item the item at index position 2 in the list. And you'll see that since we've already reversed the list, the first item is the list 4-5, the next one is the word 4, and the next one is the integer 2. You can also get a slice of a list. You can get the from 1 through 3 in the list, which is what this one does. So this gets item 1 and 2 in the list. You can also get the first 3 items like this. You can also use like negative numbers to get items from the back. Next thing are tuples. Tuples are kind of like lists, but they're immutable. That doesn't really mean too much, probably doesn't mean too much for most people, but one very thing you can do with lists is multiple assignments. So if you look at this line of code at the top, you have x, comma, y equals 1, comma, 2, and that assigns x and y 1 and 2. And you can actually, I'm sure at the beginning of CS50 we wrote some code to swap two variables. You only need one line to do that in Python. You can just use array packing and unpacking, and just do x comma y equals y comma x, and the two values get swapped. Next thing is dictionaries. So dictionaries, they're kind of like the dictionaries that you guys wrote, for your CS50 problem sets, but in Python they have a lot more features. Once again, you can put any types of variables inside, as long as the keys are immutable, so like strings or whatever. In this case, you can see the string key maps to the word value, and the string 1 maps to the word value 2. You can access things from dictionaries the same way you access things from lists. Next thing is for loops. For loops work really similarly to the way they work in C, except you don't have a counter. You just have a list, and then it iterates through all the items in the list. So if you do the function range outputs a list. So you can see range outputs the list, 1-4 outputs the list 1-2-3. And then if you do 4i in range in that list, and then you just print out all the things, you'll see that you get 2-4-6. So the variable here, I, is the variable that gets bound to the item inside the list. You can see it really does work on lists and not, counters. You can create a list of anything and iterate over that entire list. Like we have a letter here, a string, an integer, and another string, and you can iterate them in the same way you iterate over anything else. Next thing is functions. They use the keyword def. So like you define a function, it's just def, the name of the function, and then your arguments. So arguments can have default values in Python. So for example, if you want to say an argument or a function takes two arguments, you can set some of them. In this case, we set the y argument has a default of 2. So if someone calls divide evens with only one argument, then the second argument is automatically set. But if they call it with two arguments, then those two arguments get used. Note that functions are first-class citizens, just like in JavaScript. So divide evens here, if we just use divide evens without the parentheses, it's a function. And we can pass functions around just like in JavaScript. I'm going to put this whole PDF on the CS50 website, so you guys can look at this more in detail on your own. And then the next thing is object-oriented programming. So Python supports object-oriented programming, and it's heavily used in Django. So you will have to understand a little bit about it to understand how Django works, but it's pretty simple. So objects are generalizations of structs. So structs store different types of data, but in objects, you can store data and you can have computer logic. So if you want to think of what they correspond to, in the real world, objects are just things. So like, you could have, in this case, we have a wallet object, right? So this first line is a doc string. It's sort of documentation. It stores money. So this first function is the init function. The init function gets called whenever you create a new wallet object. So this class definition here defines what a wallet object is, and then when you want to create a new one, init is called. So you can see that you have starting money here. So if you create a new wallet, you can define how much money the wallet starts with, and then it does self.cash equals starting money. So the object, the new wallet you create, will have an attribute cash, which will have the starting money in it. The next one is spend. So if the amount you want to spend is greater than the cash you have left, it doesn't let you spend the money. Otherwise, it deducts the money from your wallet, just like you would expect a wallet to do. So here we use the object that we just defined. We create a new wallet. This is we call it W equals wallet. It has $30 in this wallet. So as you can see, by calling w.cash is how much cash is in that wallet. And you spend $15, and you notice that you get how much money you have left. We can create another wallet, and you'll notice that the cash in the new wallet is different from the cash in the old wallet. So that's sort of how objects work in Python. The last thing about object-oriented programming is inheritance. So if you have some sort of object and you want another object that's essentially a different version of that object, you can inherit. So here we have the class Magic Wallet, which inherits from Wallet. So Magic Wallet is a wallet. So Magic Wallet will have all of the attributes and functions that a regular wallet has, plus all this other stuff that I defined. So here I overwrote init. So when you create a magic wallet, it'll use this init as opposed to the wallets init. And I've defined a new function called replenish that replenishes the cache in the wallet. So if you try this, you can see that magic wallet has all the same stuff of a regular wallet, but it also has replenish. So you can spend from the magic wallet even though you didn't define magic wallet in the Magic Wallet class. All right, so let's talk about Django now. So we're going to create a website called Jig. It's going to be really similar to Dig. People will submit links to the website, and other people can vote those up or down. People can't comment on links. I took that out, but the front page will show links that people see. So if you've ever used Dig, we're going to make a website kind of similar to that. So first thing is installing Django. If you're on Windows, it's really easy. You go to instantdjango.com. You download an executable. Very easy. If you're on Mac, Linux, or Unix, there's instructions on the Django website. If you have a Mac, Python's already installed. If you have Linux, Python is probably also already installed. So you only have to worry about installing Django. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So we're going to want to start the project, and I'm going to, I'm already in the folder that I want to create my project at, so it's you just type Django admin.py start project, and then the name of your project. Yeah. And then this will create a project for me. So if you can see that Jig shows up right here. So if you go into to Jig, you can sort of see the things that it creates for you. It doesn't create very much, but there's a couple files here. And then the next thing we want to do is set our settings correctly. So we can go into the settings file and make the correct edits to make sure our settings are correct. So Django has a settings file that configures all your settings. So you put your database in here. You put which database you want to use. Django supports MySQL. It supports SQLite 3, Postgres, and perhaps even Microsoft SQL Server. I'd recommend using SQLite 3 or MySQL. SQLite 3 is just the easiest because you don't have to do any configuration. You don't have to set up any databases. On On Linux, it's most likely installed. On Mac, it's already installed. And if you're on Windows, Instant Django comes with it. So it's just really easy to work with. For SQLite 3, the database name is just the path to the database. So it's just a file. So in this case, it's going to be so this can be whatever you want, but this is where the database file is going to be put. You probably want to put it in the same directory as your Django project. You don't have to worry about any of this other stuff in the database if you're using SQLite 3. If you're using MySQL, you'll have to worry about this. So that's why I wouldn't use MySQL. But you can if you want. All right. So to make sure that your settings work, you run python manage.py syncdb. And looks like it didn't work. So let's see users. So let's try that again. And we have it working. So it does a bunch of stuff. And this actually, when you run syncdb, it actually creates all the database tables for you, so you don't have to worry about that at all. All right. So next step is to actually create one of the apps that go inside our project. We're going to create a links app that's going to, you know, do all the stuff that Jig would do. It's going to let people upload links and, you know, all that fun stuff. So to create new apps, it's python manage.py and start app. We'll call it links. All right. So if you look again, you'll notice that it's created for us this links folder, which stores the links app. You'll see inside the links app, it gives us some stuff, models, and views particularly. Okay, you probably can't see it on the side, but I'll show you in the terminal. Let's see. So if you look inside the links folder, it creates a couple files for you. So the first thing we want to do is write the models. So models represent your data as objects. So in this case, the types of objects we're going to have are we're going to have link objects and channel objects. So the idea is that people will come to your website and upload links, which will fit inside channels. So the two major objects you'll need are links and channels. And you know what they do is like channels organize the links into different categories, basically, and then people will be able to look at links in different categories. So if you look at the channel class, you'll see that we have defined only one attribute here. So name is one of the attributes we defined here. And I'm going to go ahead and put that in here. Let's see. So the name attribute is just the name of the channel. So if you had like a computers channel at jig.com, you would see that here. Notice how the indentation is. You know, everything under the channels is indented one, and then everything under this function here is indented another indent. And so in the database, this object will be represented with two columns, a primary key, which is automatically defined, and then a name column, which is going to be a character field, this char field here with max length 100. After you've defined this, these tables will automatically get created for you in the database, and you probably won't ever have to look at the database. The next item here that we're going to have is a link. So links are the attributes a link is going to have is it's going to have a title. So when it shows up on the page, people will be able to identify it by the title. And then it's going to have a few other ones. It's going to have a URL, so the actual place it links to. And then a created on date, a timestamp, how many votes it has, and then what channel it's part of. So title, you'll notice, again, is a character field, same data type. It'll be represented as a varchar in the database. and then a URL, which is a URL field. And a URL field is a special field created by made by Django. It will be representing the database as a varchar, but it has other functions on it. So the URL field will do things like validate that the URL exists before it lets you upload this URL. So it just adds a bunch of stuff on top of the basic character field. The next thing is a created on field, which is a date time field. Date time fields, they store date and time. And if you use it like this, you don't have to worry about setting the default. You'll notice that the default is set to be datetime.now. So whenever someone uploads something, it'll be whenever someone uploads the link, it'll be that time that gets used. Also, we have votes, which is just an integer. By default, it's set to 0. And the last thing here we have is channels, which is a many-to-many field. So many-to-many fields represent interrelationships in your data where many channels get associated with many links. So a single link can have multiple channels. So you can imagine a link might be associated with a computer's channel and maybe, you know, a video game's channel. But channels can have a lot of links. So this sort of represents that interaction between the two data types. The last thing you'll notice is that in both of these models, we have we've defined the Unicode function, and the Unicode function is just returns the string representation of the object. So if Django were to ask the channel a channel object for a string representation, it would just return the name of the channel. So if you printed out a channel object, it would just print out the name of the channel. Let's see. Now we have to create. Now that we have our objects, we need to create tables in our database, which normally requires PHP, MyAdmin, and stuff like that. But in this case, Django's going to do all of it automatically. If you go into the settings file, you scroll down, you'll see the installed apps folder. So go ahead, and we're going to put our app in the folder or in the setting. And it's just jig.links is the name of our app. It's the name of the project, dot, and then the name of the app. And then we can run syncdb again. And then you notice it says creating table links channel and links link. And it actually creates the tables that we need to run this for our models. So all of that gets done automatically. So next thing is the admin panel. So one of Django's most powerful features is that automatically generated admin. So we've created a couple models, but we can't do anything with them yet. But the admin panel helps us get started really quickly. So we're just going to go to the settings file, add the admin application. And then we're going to change our URL configuration. So I'll talk about URLs in a little bit. But to enable the admin, it's pretty simple. Just do this and do this. Sorry, I uncommented a couple lines. If you look in the comments in the setting or in the URLs, it tells you which lines to uncomment to enable the admin. It's this line here and these two lines here. So they're already there, you just have to uncomment them. And then we're going to create an admin panel definition. So this is pretty simple. We just create a new file inside the links folder. We'll call it admin.py. And then the code will include we're just going to import the admin, and then we're going to import the models from the models definition that we've created. So we've created created the link and the channel models, and we're just going to import them into this file, and then we're going to register them with the admin site. And then we set up the database again to take into account the new admin stuff we just added. Let's see. So it'll ask us if you want to create a super user. You hit yes. You create a super user, and then it creates all the tables for the admin stuff. And then we can start running the website already. You run python manage.py and then run server, and then it'll load up a development server on your machine. And you can just open up a regular web browser. I've got Safari open here. Go to localhost :8000, and you can see our website is up. If you go to /admin, you'll be able to see the admin panel. Put in your username and password, and then you see we already have a bunch of stuff. So here we have the links application, and inside we can start editing channels. We can add some channels. Let's add a CS50 channel. Let's add a lolcats channel. And maybe a computers channel. So now our application already has three channels added, and we can also add links here too. You can see it generates all of this stuff automatically for us. And you can just start adding things. It's pretty self-explanatory. So the idea is that for this admin panel is that it serves as a backend so that you, the programmer, can just sort of add things into your web application. So if you have certain objects that you want to be there when your web app starts, you can add them with the admin panel. And you can also use the admin panel to make changes to things that people have uploaded. So here's the admin panel. It looks a little weird because of the font sizes, but looks like this. You can see you can already add channels and links. Don't worry about the sites, groups, and users for now. But this serves as a really fast way to get your website started. So the admin panel is not for for generic users, although you can customize it to be that way. So next thing we're going to do is next thing we're going to do is write the feature that allows people to see the links that have been added. So first thing is just going to add a couple links. Let's add CS50, CS50.net. We'll start out with 20 votes. It's really all three of these categories. So we've got CS50 in there. That should be fine for now. So now we'll write the actual part of the website that people see. So first thing is views. So when someone visits a URL in your website, those URLs access are mapped to views. So the views control what types of data are loaded before the website or the web page is rendered. So if someone comes to the index, ideally we want them to see a list of all the links, right? So what we need to do is if you were writing this in PHP, you would write SQL statements to get all the links from the database, and then you would render the page. In Django, we load all the link objects, and then we send them over to to templates. I'll talk about that in a second. But if you open up the views.py file in your links app, you add a few lines. Views are any function that take a request object as its first parameter. So when someone visits jig.com, it'll redirect them it'll send them over to the index view, which will get called, and then all the stuff inside the index view will happen. So this is like that. And so the first thing that happens is inside the index view is that it loads a bunch of links. So this is equivalent to the SQL statements that would get all the links. But this does it in a much easier way. So the first thing is it uses the link class. We've already defined the link class in the models.py file, and then it uses objects. So objects is the list of link is a class, and objects are all of the objects that belong to that class in this case. The next function we call is .all. So this is all of the links objects. And then what we want to do is order by votes descending. So this is negative votes. Is that right? Oh, shoot. This is the wrong character. It's negative because we want to order them in a descending order. So the links with the most votes will show up on top. And then at the end, if you remember from before, this is a slicing syntax. So we take the first 10 links that have the most votes. So this isn't actually slow. It doesn't actually find all of them first and then order them and then only take 10. It makes one SQL query that encompasses all of these things. So then after we've loaded the top 10 links objects, we actually just want to return a bunch of HTML. And render to response is a shortcut that renders a template and then turns that into an HTTP response object and then returns that to the user. So the first argument is the template, is the name of the template, which is going to be index.html. I'm going to create that in a little bit. And then the next thing is a dictionary of values that we want to pass into the template object, the template renderer. So we're going to pass our links list. It's a list of links into the template, and we're going to pass it as links. So in template, you're going to use the word links, and you're going to get the links that we have here. So let's get to that. We're going to create the templates folder. This is where you're going to store all your templates. This is where we're going to actually render the do the actual rendering. So let me just copy this in. So if you notice, you can see this already looks a little bit like PHP. So you can see that we're mixing regular HTML with some stuff that you haven't seen before. So here we have regular HTML stuff, HTML head, title, body, etc. And then we have an unordered list here. And inside this list, we have this thing, which is a tag. And this is a for tag, and it works exactly the way that you would think it works. It iterates through all the objects in links, and then it does everything in between. So this is really similar to PHP. You just dump out all of the links inside, all the link objects inside the links list. So then we have a list item, and then we're going to print out the votes. So if you notice the double curly braces, this actually directly prints out a variable. So it's kind of like echo in PHP. So we're going to use link.votes, and this is going to be the number of votes that a link has. And then we're going to print out the word votes and then the actual link. So here we have link.url, which is the URL that someone uploaded. We've actually defined all of these already in our models file. So if you look here, link has a URL attribute, a title attribute, and a votes attribute. And that stuff all shows up here. And then in the text of the link, we have link.title. And then we close the for loop. So now that we've created the view and the rendering engine, we need to create a URL. So like the way people are actually going to access this view is they're going to visit a URL and then the URL will get mapped to a view. So let's do that. So in urls.py, this is where we configure all our URLs. Thing about URLs is that you notice that some sites URLs are end with .html and it looks like they're actual files, and then in some sites they're configured in a way that that doesn't correspond directly to HTML files, and this is sort of the thing that they do to get there. They just directly map URLs to views. So in this case, we're gonna map the we're going to map the index. If someone goes to index, or if someone goes to or if someone just goes to the home page, they would see this. So let's add a couple lines. Django uses regular expressions to to map URLs. So whenever a URL comes in from the user, it's going to try to match that to a regular expression inside the urls.py file, and then map that to a view. So in this case, we have the regular expressions caret dollar and caret home slash dollar. So caret means the beginning of the URL, and then dollar means the end of the URL. So if the URL is just jig.com, then it'll map to the jig.links.views.index view that we just defined. And if it's jig.com/home, it'll go there. All right. So at this point, our website should work. So if we go back to our web browser and go here, you'll notice that you can see the link that we have already, and it's a list. It's just how many votes and then the actual link. So this would take us to cs50.net. If we add some more links, let's say we add a link to If we add a link to Eichner's cheeseburger, and then go back to the front page, you'll see Wildcat's there too. Okay, so now we have the ability for the admin to add new links, but we also want the ability for regular people visiting the website to add links. Let's write that. So the thing you will need is we'll need forms, right? So you need to create some form for some people to upload information, and they're going to upload that to the website. Normally you would think that you would need to write all the form information out again. If people submit a link, they're going to have a URL, they're going to have a title, and they're going to have, which channels it's in. But we already wrote all that information down. We already defined all that in the models, so we shouldn't have to do that again. So what Django does is Django has something called a model form that lets you write forms based on models. So let's create some form objects, or one. So we're going to create the forms.py file. And here, it's going to contain the definition of the forms that we're going to use in this project. So we have to import a few things, specifically model form and then the link we use. So this link form class defines a form, and model form takes care of most of the things inside this form already for us. The only thing we have to do is specify some meta information. And in this case, we have to specify what model it is. In here, we've specified that it's the link model. And then we specify which fields that we want to exclude. You can also specify which fields to include and other things like that. But I'll talk about that a little bit later. In this case, we've specified the link model, and then we don't want people who are uploading to the website to be able to specify how many votes they start out with and how many and when it's created on. So we exclude those fields, and we just include all the other fields. So this is all you have to do to actually write the form. Django is going to take care of everything else. So let's write a view that uses this form now. So let's go back to the views file, and we'll add some more stuff. So if you'll notice, this is the same views file that we've been using. Let's see. So here we use, hold on a second. Okay, so we've defined this add link view that lets people add links. So what we generally do is have the same view handle both displaying the form and processing the form information. So the first thing we do is check the method of the request. So if someone sends us a post request, that means we know they've submitted a form. And what we try to do is we create a new form object using the post request, which is this line. So form equals link form request.post. And this creates a new link form object using the request.post parameters. And then we check to see if the form is valid. Whether the form is valid is something that the individual fields take care of. So if people put in letters in an integer field, the form won't turn out to be valid. And if it is valid, then we can save the form. We'll save the form, and then we'll redirect them to the index. We'll redirect them to the link slash, which is just the root of your site. If the form isn't valid, though, we just want to display the form again, and Django will actually show a bunch of error messages associated with it. Also, if the request is not a post request, that means we know that whoever's requesting the form is viewing the form for the first time. So we'll just create a new blank form and show them that. So we use render to response again. We're going to create a new template called add link, and we're going to display the form there. So let's do that. Grab this bit of HTML. All right, so so you'll notice that this is pretty similar to what you've seen before. You actually have to define the form, the form tag, because that way that you can then customize, exactly how you're going to do things. For example, if you wanted to, use get as opposed to post, you can change that here, and then where the target of your form is. So here, the target of the form is dot, which means the same page. So whatever the page they're currently at, it's going to reload that page again with a, it's going to send a request for that same page, but with post information. Also, you're going to have to include the input tag. So the submit button, you're going to have to write that yourself, which is this line here. But the rest of the form, all the other stuff, is just form dot asp or as table. In this case, we use asp, and what it does is it just inserts every line of the form as a paragraph. All right. So last thing we need to do is add a URL. So we'll make it so that when people visit add link, they're going to get to that view. Okay, so our form is all ready to go. Go to add link. Oops. It's all right. Hold on 1 second. Form is up high. Oh, I see. Okay, so actually, here's another good thing you'll notice, is that if you have errors in anything, Django will give you a full stack trace. If you look here, it says is a syntax error. It tells you here what file it's in, forms.py on line 7. It also tells you everything about the whole traceback, the whole stack of which functions it called. So this is all really helpful for debugging. But What? Okay, here we go. So we have all of the stuff in the form already. We have title, URL, and then channels. This stuff is all generated automatically for us when we just define the model form. So for example, if we wanted to add another link, Apple. You'd see it shows up already. Django also, does validation for us. So let's say that we included, the user made a mistake. They wanted to put up Microsoft. They put up, they put up a bunch of random numbers instead. You'd submit, and then it would automatically tell you that this is not a valid URL. Also, if you've omitted something, I think it would do the same. This field is required. If you omit more than one, all this stuff, shows up automatically. So you don't have to write any code to do this. Django does it all for you. All right. So now that people can add links, people should probably be able to vote. On the front, it says, this is 20 votes, but it doesn't give any way for people to vote. So let's write that in. Once again, we're going to need a view for it. So let's go back to the views file, views.py, and we're going to add this code. So I import some extra stuff. So here's the vote. The vote view. So if you notice some different things in this view is that, first of all, it takes more arguments. It takes a link ID argument and an up-down argument besides the regular request argument. So views can take any number of arguments as long as in the URL configuration you pass those arguments onto the view. So in this case, when you vote for a link, you're going to need to know, besides just the request object, you're going to need to know which link is voted for, and you're going to need to know, if that got voted up or down. So that's link ID and up down. So the first thing we do is try to grab the link that people are trying to vote for. We use get object or 404. So this is a really handy shortcut. It tries to find an object from the database, and if it can't find it, it returns a 404 response, which means object not found. This is an easy way to handle an error. So, for example, if someone puts in like link ID equals 1,000,000, you don't have that link, this would be handled automatically for you. So the first argument in getObject or 404 is the type of object you want. In this case, we want to get a link object. And then the next thing is all of the filters you want. Here we want to, the PK stands for primary key. And that's going to be the primary key of the link, and is going to be link ID. So link ID is actually going to be a string that gets passed in, so we need to convert it into an integer before we use that as a filter. And then after you find the object, we modify the votes. So if up down is 1, it gets an additional vote, and if it's -1, it loses a vote. And then we save the link, and then we redirect people back to the index. So that's very simple view. And then we just need a URL. In this case, we don't actually render anything, so we don't need to create a new template since we're just redirecting people back to the home page after they vote. Obviously, if you're writing the site for real, you might want to send them to some sort of page that confirms that they voted, or maybe you want to send them to the page that they were at, but I'll let you figure out how you would do that in Django. In this case, we're going to add some URL configurations to the URLs so that people can access the voting views. Whoa, that's not right. Um, Okay, so we've added two new URLs. So we've added vote slash this weird thing, then up, and vote slash the weird thing slash down. So both of these map to the same thing, except the first one passes up down 1, and the second one passes up down -1. So if someone views the URL slash up, they'd be adding 1 to the vote, and if they did the down 1, they'd be subtracting 1 from the vote. Now this thing here is part of a regular expression. So regular expressions, I think we're talking about a little bit in lecture, but in Django, the way it works inside these URL configurations is that things inside parentheses are captured and then passed to the view objects as arguments. So anything captured in between, captured by this regular expression slash d plus, will be passed into the vote. Will be passed into the vote view. So inside the parentheses is slash d, which stands for digit. So that's any numerical digit, and then plus, which means one or more of. So if someone has, if someone types vote slash 3 slash up, then they'll be seeing, then they'll be voting for number 3. They'll be voting up for number 3. If they type vote slash, potato slash up, then it won't match because potato is not, doesn't have any digits and none, isn't all digits. So these would map, things correctly. And then what happens is that things captured in URLs get passed in order to the view, and then the things at the end get passed to the view. So in this case, you can see that slash D would get passed into the vote view as the link ID, and then the last thing would be passed as up down. All right. Now we'll modify the home page template so that people can see the links to vote for there. So we'll go back to the index.html and we'll just add some stuff here. So let's change it to look like this. So we haven't changed things too much. We've just added a link for up and down. So you would see the number of votes it has, and then you would, maybe I want to say votes, and then, up or down. Or maybe you vote up or down. And then notice here that we use, in the URL, we have brace link.pk. So the pk attribute exists on all objects. Even though we didn't define the PK attribute is implicitly defined by Django to be the primary key. So in most cases, primary keys are just integers. They function as IDs, and that's what we're going to use them for here. So if we save this, we should be able to go to the website. Notice the change immediately. We can vote up or down. Let's vote up, and you can see things start changing right away. Obviously, this isn't a great design for an actual website because you don't want people to be able to vote, an infinite number of times. So to correct for this, inside the view, you might want to look at people's IP addresses, and if that IP address has already votes, put that in the database. You can check to see whether the... then you can check to see if someone's voted before for a certain link. And if they voted for the link, then don't let them vote again. But in this case, we haven't implemented that yet, so people can just sort of vote. And you notice that the order of things get shifted because we sort by the number of votes. So if we vote CS50 down a lot, it'll move in the rankings. So CS50 is here now. Anyways. So people can vote now. And the other feature that we haven't implemented yet is channels. So we should let people be able to see all the links inside a certain channel. Like if I'm only interested in lolcat links, I don't want to see this Apple link. So I'll talk about how to do the channel thing after we change the tape. All right. So we're going to talk about channels. We're going to let people. We're going to add the feature to view links or sort links basically by channel. So So let's add the view. We'll go into the views file and we'll add the view for channel. So as you might expect, it's not very complicated. Let's see. So we just get a channel object. I guess there's more stuff here. We get a channel object, and then we grab a channel object from the database, and then we just sort of display it. So the first line here is, once again, a get object or 404. And what we're going to do is we're going to get a channel, and we're going to the filter we're going to use is name underscore underscore iExact equals channel name. So iExact means case insensitive. So when someone enters a channel, we don't want the we don't want them to have to enter in the correct upper or lower case for whatever channel that is. So we're going to use a case insensitive search. In general, it's for filters. It's the name of the column you want to filter on. So in this case, it's name, because we want to filter on the channel name. And then underscore, underscore, and then the type of filter we want to use. So if we had integers, we could use greater than. We could use, for example, that, which would be greater than or greater than equal to. There's also a bunch of date filters that we can use. But in this case, we're just going to use iExact, which means case inexact. On channel name. Channel name is actually something that's going to be passed into this view. So after we grab the channel, we're going to do render to response. The template we want to use is channel.html, which I'm going to create in a little bit. And then the two things that we want to pass in are the actual channel, and then the list of links. So the reason we're going to pass in a link, we actually need to pass in the links is going to be apparent in a little bit. But those are the two things that we pass to the template. So let's create the template now. So this time, instead of just creating a new template from scratch, we're going to use an old template that we already have. So if you notice an index, the index template pretty much gives us almost everything we want, except maybe the name of the channel. So it already has features for listing all of the links with the voting stuff. We don't want to write all that stuff over again. So what we're going to do is we're going to make this template extendable. So we add a block. We're going to call this block before links. And in the on the main page, it's just going to have a header that says welcome to JIG. But when we extend the index, we can replace the before links block with anything we want. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's create a new template. We're going to call this template the channel.html template. And it's going to extend index.html. So it's going to, everything that index.html has, it will have. The one exception is that we'll change the block so that it says something different. So remember that we passed the channel object in here. So we're going to do channel.name. So this is the whole template. It's a lot simpler than the index.html template because we're making index.html do all the work. So let's add a URL for this. We'll go back to urls.py. And we'll do, if people go to channels, slash, and then they type the name of the channel, they should be able to see the channel, right? So we're going to want to capture the name of the channel that they type. We're going to use the regular expression A to Z, plus. So what that means is, everything in square brackets means character class. So it'll match anything that is a character class of this that's defined here. So in here we've defined capital A through capital Z and then A through Z. So if people type a bunch of letters, they're going to be able to, that's going to get matched here. So if they type channel slash any combination of letters, this URL will be matched and they will be sent over to the channel views. All right, so let's try it. We haven't set up any links, but we can just type it in. Okay, that didn't quite work. It said we had an error in the views file. So let's take a look at that. Oh, I forgot to close the parentheses here on the channel thing. So, links. Oh, whoops, that's not right. So this is a channel.link set. Oh, I forgot to mention this. If you look at the views, the channel view, you notice that we use channel.link_set.all. So we didn't actually define the link set attribute of channel. Remember that we defined a many-to-many relationship on the links object, not on the channel object. But Django automatically creates this, creates these managers for us on the channel object, and it's called link set. So we try it again. You'll see all the ones that have lolcats, which are CS50, which are CS50 and the lolcats link. So look at that. Or if you go back to the home page, you'll see welcome to JIG. And then here, if you went to channel computers, you'd see CS50 and Apple. So that pretty much wraps up all of the basic tutorial stuff I wanted to talk about. If you notice, like, the initial setup is a little more lengthy than in PHP. But as you start developing individual features, there's very little code you have to write. For example, after we, the channel code or the channel feature we wrote only required maybe 10 total lines of code, and it's very, very fast to write code after you have everything set up. So that's why you would want to use Django as opposed to PHP. So I'm going to talk briefly about some more advanced stuff you can do with Django. First thing is static media. So you notice that we don't have any CSS or anything on our page. So it looks kind of ghetto. It's just regular HTML. There's no CSS at all. But you'd want that on your real site. But the thing is, Django isn't designed for serving up static media. It's really designed for dynamic files. So if you wanted to serve dynamic CSS files or dynamic JavaScript files, you could use Django. But in most cases, most of the stuff would be static. And that means it doesn't change depending on what the user requests. And in that case, normally you would want to use a different type of server, not a Django server. You might want to just use regular Apache or something like that to serve that stuff. But if you're just developing, you can configure Django to serve the static files. And there's a handy little guide on the Django website. You'll get a link to this when I put up this PDF that shows you how to serve up static things like images, CSS, JavaScript, etc. Next thing, files and images. So in many cases, you want people to be able to upload files and images to to your web server. For whatever reason, if you want people to upload photos for maybe, say, some sort of Google Maps mashup or something, you can do that with Django. There's lots of built-in features. If you create a form that has a file field, then that'll automatically create the correct form to let people upload files. And then you can work with file or image objects, which makes dealing with files really easy because they have methods that do most of the things that you would want them to do already. There's a little guide at the Django project website again. Next thing is tags and filters. Oh, shoot, that didn't work. So right now the Django templating system, as I've described it, is very limited in function, and that's done by design. But there are a lot of features that make it more powerful than it already is. So the two things are tags and filters. So you've already seen tags before. Tags are like for the for tag is a tag. It's anything with the curly brace and then the parentheses. And those are, you know, powerful template features that sort of control logic, and there's a bunch of those listed on the course website. And then the next thing is filters. So filters are a lot less powerful, but they're very, very useful. So what they do is they help you massage your data. So like you present some variable to the template, and then you in the template you can apply filters to that data to, you know, make it appear the way you want. So I have an example here. It didn't quite render right, but imagine there's spaces in the sentence where you normally expect spaces. So like Jansu space is space from space Turkey. And then in the template, you would write string and then vertical bar, which indicates you want to use a filter, and then the lower filter, which takes all of the letters and makes them lowercase, and then another filter, the truncate words filter, which, you know, limits whatever it is to that many words. So this would show up as Jansu is, and then dot, 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 which is what the two filters give you. So filters, in this way, you can chain them, so you can apply one filter after another. And filters also, you know, take arguments, if you notice here. Next thing is authentication. So, you know, like in CS50 Finance, you didn't want anyone to log into your web. You didn't want people to use certain features unless they were logged in. Django has a lot of that built in. It's got an app called the django.contrib.auth app, and this application gives you for free a user model, and then in this user model is already defined, and you can just sort of use it to let you do what you want with users. So you can give them different permissions, and then after they log in, you can check, you know, if the request.user.is authenticated. You know, if they're authenticated, then, you know, you do whatever, and if not, you know, you return some error or something. And there's built-in stuff for doing all of this. All of this logging in and logging out stuff. You don't have to write your own code. Again, the details are at the Django project website. Next thing is sending emails. So Django has a bunch of helpers for sending email. In one of the Django.core packages, there's a function called sendmail, which just sends email. It does exactly what you think it does. It just sends a mail to whatever address. And one little trick that you can do with Django is that normally you don't want to send just plain text emails to people because they don't look very good and they're kind of difficult to construct. What you can do is you can set up a template somewhere, and this template define what your email looks like. And then before you send the email, instead of sending the email as a big string, you can render the template, and then rendering the template will give you, will give you a string, and then you can send that email as a string. So full documentation again is at the Django project website. Next thing is deployment. So you saw that we use Django's development server. You just type python manage.py run server, and you have your own server on your computer. But you don't really want to do that for deployment. When you deploy, you probably want to use Apache with mod Python. If you're on Dreamhost or like have your own web server, this is pretty easy. If you want to do this on cloud, I'm not quite sure how to do this yet, but I'll post instructions at some point. But general deployment instructions are also on the Django website. Two more things. One is customizing the admin website. So the admin website, you notice that it just generated a bunch of forms for everything automatically. But you can customize those in any way you want to get it to automatically generate, you know, better looking forms or forms in the way you want, and you can customize it to process any amount of data that you want. It's very, very powerful, and it really speeds up development. And you know, for full details, again, the website. Last thing is middleware. So Django has has something called middleware, and it's sort of, it wraps around all your views. So middleware gets called before and after your views get called. So there's sort of a way that you can access all of your responses and all requests at the that you know go through the server. So you know, Django has built a lot of built-in middleware to do things like process requests and responses, to do things like manage sessions. So you know, after during every request, it you know checks cookies and then you know saves those to manage sessions correctly. And then when you know you return responses, it returns what cookies you need to save, et cetera, et cetera. You can write your own middleware to do certain things. There's lots of things you can do with middleware. For example, one idea is when you have incoming requests, requests have IP addresses associated with them. You can take those IP addresses, convert them into zip codes, and then attach that to the request so that when you're in your views, you can access the zip codes of all your requests automatically by using the middleware instead of having to do that in every single view. And you know, there's a lot of things you can do with middleware, but it's kind of an advanced feature, but you can take a look at it on the Django website. So there's sort of an appendix with a bunch of websites, a couple websites on it. When I distribute the PDF, you can look at that. One last thing I want to do is sort of show you some things that you can do with Django. This is the Harvard Crimson's website that I'm working on right now. This is done all in Django. You can see that there's the main pages are not too built out, but if you look at the admin page, you can see there's a lot of stuff. So actually, one of the great things is you can see this admin interface for uploading articles, and it has lots of things that are really cool. So there's regular built-in stuff. Like headline, subheadline. I had to write almost zero code to get these things in the form, in the forms. And I've also implemented using jQuery and a bit of AJAX, this nice Facebook. Well, that doesn't seem to be working right now, but it's a nice Facebook like way for inputting you know, usernames for contributors, and things like that. So it also gives you, you know, these extra things that you can add in. Admin interface is very handy, generates a lot of code for you without you having to do much at all. So yeah, that's it. I'm going to distribute the code for jig.com and the PDF that I've been presenting off of. They'll probably get uploaded to the CS50 website at some point. Yeah, thanks. That's it.